The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Welcome back to The Empowered Homeowner. I am Beth Allen, your host, DIY expert, contractor, and educator. Today, I want to talk about not only doing it yourself, but when to not DIY. As much as I love teaching people how to be independent, there are those tasks that we should not be doing on our own. And I just want to make sure that we're focused in on those moments so that we are not missing the opportunity to do what's right by our house. I'm all for teaching you how to save money and stress and time, but there are some things that truly are better left for the pro because it affects not only the value of our home, but our safety as well. So I want to chat about that age-old question of to DIY or to not DIY. Now, we have to consider a number of things in that conversation. And many people are like, oh, well, I'll watch a YouTube video and I'll do it. Yes and no. So when you watch a YouTube video, you're usually watching a video from someone who has expertise. Now, I'm hoping those are the videos that you are choosing, is that you are watching videos of someone who has done this, that maybe is a seasoned professional that is sharing their professional tips and not just somebody who is doing something for the first time and you're following along with them. That's the first thing. Before you just dive into that video, make sure you're choosing the right video to guide you in that task. I always tell my students that I want you to watch three videos on a particular topic. Because in watching three videos, you're going to see what are some of the underlying similarities that all three of those content creators are bringing. You also want to make sure that you're paying attention to the differences between them. Because the way one person in a video teaches versus another may resonate and just make more sense. Or you may look at it and go, well, with my parts at my house, their approach just makes more sense. So that's another way to go about it. The other thing is to look at videos that do have a lot of traction. You want to look for videos that people are saying positive things about, that the content creator is interacting and responding and really able to perhaps guide you. I literally have had people email me because they have found me through my profile and then through my website, which is DIYhipchicks.com. But I respond back I've been able to help people take things a step further. So be very choosy about the video that you select. Of course, we all want content that is concise and to the point and just takes us where we need to go in a rush. But sometimes it is worthwhile watching a video that might seem like it's got a little bit too much background before they get to the point. And the issue is not that they're rushing to get to the point, is they're trying to give you background that you might not know. When I'm doing a class online and I'm teaching something, yeah, there's some boring stuff that I have to go over because I need to make sure that you understand some of the foundational work. If I have my nursing cap on and I'm going to talk to you about your diabetes, I'm not just going to hand you an insulin syringe and say, here, take 3 units with every meal. I need to go over some of the foundational work so that you understand what you're doing and why. And then that helps build on your skill set. So don't discount those videos that might be a little bit longer because they might have the right meat in them to help you really get a handle on it and attack the next project that you want to do. So don't be in such a rush. Give it a few extra minutes, and I promise you might learn a thing or two. Now, in addition to watching that video, you need to assess what is your actual skill. Don't decide, I'm going to replace my water heater, and you've never replaced a toilet flapper, okay? Like, we need to think about what is our skill set and how can we incrementally build that. We need to make sure we're not taking on too much in the moment that is beyond our skill set, that you don't know what you don't know, and you know more by doing the smaller things and working your way up. So skill set and skill level is really important. Now, I'm not saying just because you're a newbie, you shouldn't try things. I'm saying you need to try them in appropriate stages. The other thing is, what is your access to tools? It might be great to watch a video and you see that content creator pull out this tool and you're like, whoa, what's that? I don't have that. Well, maybe you actually are going to need that because that is a specific tool that's going to get the job done. It's going to get it done quickly. It's going to get it done well and done right. And you don't own that tool. So do that little bit of research. You can't fix everything with a Phillips head screwdriver and duct tape. Okay. Sometimes you do need to go out and get that specific tool. Does it mean that you need to run to, you know, the home center and pay top dollar for it? No. That's when you ask a neighbor who's got everything. You know, can I borrow X for the weekend? Look at Facebook Marketplace. I love, of course, people have heard me, Home Depot is my playground. I love Home Depot. But I'll hit Harbor Freight sometimes because I need a tool that doesn't have to be high quality that I'm going to be using all the time. But Harbor Freight might have the lesser cost. And yeah, it might not be the same high quality. But if I'm only going to use this once a year, twice a year, I don't need it to be super duper quality because I'm not going to be giving it the wear and tear that I would with other tools. So think outside the box as to, do I need to make that small investment? And here's my other hack for tools. If you want to do, say, a tile project, a tile backsplash, or you even want to do a floor, you need a wet saw. I don't even bother trying to use the tile cutter. It's just too complicated. It takes a certain bit of knack and expertise that you're not cracking at tiles, and then you're frustrated. Using a wet saw is so easy. It's like butter, hot knife through butter. It's really easy once you get the hang of it. But don't run out and buy a brand new tile saw for $200. Again, if you can borrow one. But here's a hack. You buy that tile saw for $200. You use it for your project, and then you sell it on Marketplace for half the price. Now, you've gotten the project done. You've used a decent tool. You've made your life easier. And then you're repurposing it. You're selling it. You could try to rent that tool for the weekend. But chances are, if you're a newbie, you're not going to get that project done in the weekend. So you could rent it for, say, $120, but buy it for $200, use it, and then sell it. You're ahead of the game. You've gotten a good tool. It's brand new to you. And then you can sell it to somebody else. So think about that when it comes to these DIY projects. Now, the other thing is a buddy. There are some projects you can easily do by yourself. But there are sometimes, you always hear me say, doing it yourself doesn't mean doing it alone. You need a buddy for some things. You need a buddy to spot you safely on ladders. You need a buddy to just hold things because there's sometimes not enough clamps and you're not an octopus. There are moments that you just can't reach. If you've ever tried to fix the sink stopper in your bathroom sink, you know what I'm talking about. Because somebody's got to hold the stopper in the sink bowl at the right height and on the right angle so that you can be in the back trying to press the rod stem into the back of the drain stem. Yeah, it's complicated and your arms don't stretch that far. Have a buddy lined up before you tackle something so you've got that co-pilot to help you through these projects. And then, of course, when you tackle DIY projects, it's time. I love the old HGTV shows where they showed you a little more in depth back then. They would actually show you and educate you a little bit. But the modern stuff, it's all, you know, smoke and mirrors about how things get done. So they show you this couple, you know, with two kids and a dog and a birthday party to get to, decides to renovate their bathroom on a weekend, and by Sunday at 9 p.m., it looks amazing. No, that didn't happen in a weekend. Give yourself time. Understand there'll be multiple trips to the store. Understand you're going to screw something up, and you may have to redo it or start over. The gift of time and grace and compassion to yourself as you start trying to do projects is really one of the best things you can do for yourself, because it's going to take you time to get started. Now, I'm mentioning these, how you can get around your DIY stuff, how you can get some of those. But let's talk about the things that you shouldn't be doing. There are some things that are more advanced. There are some things that you should not ever try. And there's several reasons. One, you don't have the expertise, the tools, the time, things like that. But there are things that you could do that void warranties because you are not skilled tradesmen to do them. When it comes to roofing, you are not skilled at managing to balance yourself on a roof, to make sure that that roof is done properly, that you don't now have a problem with your homeowner's insurance if there is a leak. So there are some tasks that are better left to the pro because they involve a certified electrician, a certified plumber, or structural changes. And you don't have the insight to make those decisions because you're not a pro in those fields. Now, I did change my water heater last fall. I am licensed and I am insured. I felt confident to change my water heater. I would not, as a newbie, just decide to do that. There's a gas hookup involved. There is the plumbing risk, leaks, all of that. So you need to consider those. Do I void a warranty? Do I risk not being covered by my insurance? Do I risk personal safety? Do I risk property damage? So things that I always tell people to leave to the pros, unless you have more advanced skills, are, of course, structural changes. Load-bearing walls. If you're sitting in your living room going, I really wish that wall would come down. Well, don't take out that sledge until you've asked someone who knows more than you do. Someone who has structural engineering experience, someone who is an architect, a GC, who can go into the attic and assess the direction of your joists and know what is load-bearing and what is not. And don't crowdsource on Facebook asking your friends by posting a picture of your room and saying, hey, do you think this is load-bearing? Okay, that's not the way to get an accurate answer. When it comes to electrical work, I'm all for homeowners changing a fixture, changing an outlet or a switch, putting in a dimmer, things like that. Do not rewire and add new circuits on your own. There are nuances that are involved that you need to know. This is where your dollars are well spent, bringing in the pro electrician to make sure that you have the proper gauge wire to the circuit. These are things that you need to know. You can't just swap certain things. Make sure that that person is licensed and insured. Plumbing, same thing. You can swap the toilet, the shower head, the faucets, the dishwasher, those type of appliances. But when it comes to running new plumbing throughout your house, maybe you want to bring in the pro. You want to make sure that things are done, especially on drains. Do they have the proper pitch so that you don't have drains backing up? Are they vented properly that you don't now create a problem later when you go to sell your house that something is out of code? That's why we bring in those pros. They know what the code is for your area so you don't run into trouble with either a repair or when you go to sell that property. So make sure that you save some of those dollars. You need to save your DIY dollars and your renovation money for those things. Windows and exterior doors. I'm not a big fan of homeowners tackling those either. If they're not done right, you risk water infiltration, mold, rot, those types of things. HVAC work. Yes, I did tell you I changed my water heater, but I have this stronger skill set for that. For your HVAC unit, you need to make sure you're not creating a situation that you have carbon monoxide entering your home and creating a health hazard. Gas-powered appliances. Are they properly hooked up? Is there a risk of a gas leak because you didn't use the proper threaded connections, because you didn't test that connection properly? And again, the code compliant repairs. Just because you're doing something doesn't mean that it's going to meet building code. And if you do it wrong now and then you go to sell in 5 years, you've got to deal with maybe taking something apart completely because it wasn't done right. So when we had our basement done years ago, we brought in a licensed contractor to do the drywall. I'm sorry, the framing, the drywall, and the electric. We did all the finish work. We put in the interior doors, the doorknobs, we painted, we did all of the trim work. Those were the things that we tackled, knowing that the other things were done to code and we didn't have to worry moving forward. So it's just a basic list of DIY do's and don'ts that you need to consider as you're tackling these projects. So if you want to do that bathroom renovation, sure, you can bring in a plumber for just a piece. Let him come in and move the shower because you're moving and expanding that shower. But then you can finish actually putting in the finished hardware. You can do the toilet, you can do the sinks, but he did a piece of it. So you have that option where you can work with a trusted pro for pieces of your project, and you can still feel very much a part of the work that you are doing, and you're taking some of that burden off. Now, I always want to talk to homeowners about building a relationship with a contractor. And I say relationship because you're inviting these pros, and oftentimes they're gentlemen. You're inviting these men into your home, and they are in your vulnerable spaces. They're in your kitchen, in your living room, and they're getting to know your kids and your pets. And sometimes they're in your bedroom, in your bathroom. You want to have a relationship with someone that you feel safe with, that you trust, not just from a physical standpoint of you know, God forbid being assaulted, but from the trust that I know this person respects me, respects my home, I will welcome this person back. So how do you build that relationship? Part of that comes down to you being open. And I always tell homeowners, you're developing that relationship. So when you meet with them for the first time, I like to set the tone. I'm looking to hire somebody to come and work with me on this project. I am expecting you to give me a fair price, to communicate well with me, to respect my home. You set the tone by bringing that level of respect and professionalism to your conversation as well. I have seen homeowners who have talked down to tradesmen in their home because too many people have this mindset that people that work with their hands are not as sophisticated or educated or worthy as people that have college degrees. And that could not be any further than the truth. The country was built on the backs of tradespeople. So we need to be respectful. So when you bring that person in, treat them with respect, offer them water, ask if they need to use the restroom. All of those things matter to building that relationship. Because if they do great work for you, you will refer them out. You will bring them back. So it's a two-way street. So you truly want to invest in them and build that friendship so that you have that person in your back pocket that you trust. Because if you trust them and you get exceptional work out of them, they're then going to be able to refer you to their network. If you are a hostile homeowner who gives them a hard time, who doesn't speak to them kindly, who doesn't appreciate their skill set and talks down, they're not going to refer you to any of their good guys because you're getting blackballed and you're now on that, we don't want to work with this homeowner list. So that's how you can work with those pros and bring them in for a solid project. Now, there are a few contractor do's and don'ts that I want to share with you. Before you decide to tackle a project and you're going to hire a pro, you need to educate yourself. You need to understand what is the scope of this project. If you think that you're going to get a 2-car garage addition put on your house in a week and it's going to cost you $5,000, well, you're completely off base in your expectations. So for you to do some research ahead of meeting with a pro, you're going to come into it with a better understanding and clearer expectation of what is the reality and the scope of the project. This way, he doesn't show up. He starts talking about, you know, $40,000, $50,000, and you're like, what? Do a little bit of research. All you have to do is Google, what is the going cost of a 2-car garage addition in my state or in my county? and you're going to get some ballpark figures. So educate yourself. You want to get everything in writing. You want to have a solid contract. If you want to hear more about contracts, make sure you go back to my episode that I did with Nick Cornea of LBK Design Build. Nick really broke down some great information on contract work and getting all what you need in that decision-making process. When it comes to getting your estimates, play the field. You need to get a couple estimates. You don't need 10, but don't go with just the one person. Get 3 estimates and take a look at all of the different facets. It's not just price. It's scope of project. How many people are on the team? What type of materials are they using? What's all included? Are they going to hit you with additions and change orders later? This will make a difference so that you are actually comparing apples to apples. And for all of the ladies out there, I don't want to hear anyone say to a contractor, I have to talk to my husband. As soon as you say to that pro, I have to talk to my husband in that way, you've given away your power. You've given away your authority to make decisions in this process. And it could be the husband that's also going to say, I need to talk to my wife. No, phrase it this way. My wife and I, my husband and I, will discuss this together and we'll get back to you. This makes it very clear that you are a united front and that there is not one person, because nothing bothers me more than a contractor showing up and they're talking to my husband and they're excluding me from the conversation. So you set it up right from the beginning. We will discuss it and we will get back to you. It creates a joint ownership in the project and creates an expectation of respect. Now, don't be distracted when you bring someone in to give you an estimate and you want them to come in and measure and assess an area. You need to be focused on them. So that means you don't have the baby on your hip, the dog crying at the door. Plan ahead. Maybe you bring your parents or your in-laws over to watch the kids so that you can focus and have these conversations. So you're going to get what you need from the project communicated clearly so the contractor can walk away with all of the right information and come back to you. So don't be distracted. And of course, this is really, really important. You never give a large deposit on a project. You should never give more than 30% ever as a down payment on a project, and it should never be in cash. You want to have a paper trail so that if there is a problem, you can track them down. And make sure that they are licensed, because the licensing will help protect you if you have a fraud case. So make sure you're doing that. One of the other things that is really important about bringing someone into your home is further communication about the project. You know, I like to joke. I have 3 male children that are all adults and my husband. So growing up, I was the only girl in the house. So that Venus and Mars thing is very real. I understand that. When you're working with a contractor at your house, typically it could be an all-male crew. Communication is key to making this project go well. So have the communication about what your expectations are. Where is the parking for the crew? If you're in a condo or a townhouse, is there free accessible parking and a lot? Where can they park their big trailer with all their equipment? Or do you live on a quiet suburban street that parking's not an issue? Discuss parking. Discuss smoking. Is it okay if the crew smokes outside your home? Is there some place for them to dispose of a cigarette? Do they need to leave the property? What about bathroom use? You know, if it's a big project, most contractors will bring a porta pot for their crew. But if it's a short 2-day thing, are you comfortable letting them use your restroom, or do you expect them to drive over to the close Wawa to use the bathroom? Talk about this so nobody's uncomfortable in the moment. Music. Are you okay with the crew listening to music? Is there an issue because you have young children around and you don't want a particular kind of music being played? Just talk about it. You don't have to be uptight. It doesn't have to be hostile. It's just a conversation. I had a contractor build a deck at my house, and part of our deal was that I would work with him every day. And it was just the best deal ever, because I got to be a part of building our deck and I didn't have to take all the work on myself. But Chris and I would have music wars. He wanted country, I wanted pop. So, you know, it was a playful, fun banter that we had going. What are the cleanup expectations you have? If you have kids and pets, do you need everything put away at the end of the workday? Can you quarter things off so that there's still safety involved? Pets and kids, exiting. What are you doing about the pets and the kids? Do you need to worry about them taking off through an open door? Are you going to lose them? What can you do to keep the pets locked up so there is no issue? And then another really important piece is the HOA. Do you live in a community that has rules that you have to abide by, that you have to communicate to that contractor so that you don't have any issues down the road that you have violated something because you used the wrong paint color, you used the wrong materials, and now you have to rip something out because you authorized it, the contractor did it, but now it's got to be redone because you made the mistake of not getting the HOA approval. So any project you do in your house, you can't just decide on Saturday morning, you know what? I'm going to renovate my kitchen this weekend and dive in. These things require a little bit of research, a little bit of thought, a little bit of study, planning. What is your budget? Who's going to help you? What's your timetable? Take time to invest in these things and you will be successful. Whether you do it yourself or whether you bring in a pro for all or a piece of the project that you're working on. It's about empowering yourself so that you make solid decisions that you are happy about down the road. And I really want you to tackle your ability to dive into these projects because I know you can do them and I know you can be a smart, empowered homeowner. Remember, doing it yourself does not mean doing it alone. When it comes to weatherizing your home, whether it's the heat of the summer or the cold of the winter, your go-to is the Frost King. Frost King has been the nation's go-to resource in weatherizing your home from drafts and bugs and water infiltration for decades. My favorite product is the reusable weather seal. This thin product can go on any door or window. It is lightweight, it is white in color to blend into all of your door frames, and it is completely repositionable. So if you are looking for the perfect weather seal, your go-to is the Frost King.